TFM.
This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, your source for the best audiobooks, including unabridged readings of the latest novels from the incredible family of Star Trek authors. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help this show and the network at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 226, Waiting Naked in a Shuttle Pod. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Larry Nemechek. We'll be talking about Star Trek's 6 Emmy nominations and sharing our thoughts on Lower Decks in the lead-up to the series premiere. And while this podcast is a bit late being released, and the first episode of Lower Decks has already premiered, we hope you will still enjoy our discussion, which covers a range of creative and business topics. So get animated and let's step into the Ready Room. Larry, what are you doing down here? I was wandering down to my new little smaller ready room that's down in the lower decks of the ship, and I see you've already found it.
Well, I was trying out my new 2380 version webcam, microphone, and router, and all my new tech gear, and what better way to put it all to use than to wander around here in the lower decks of Trek FM?
Well, I hope that you had Chief Engineer Billups help you set all that stuff up.
Bless you. Oh, I'm sorry. What? Oh, that was a name. Oh, I thought you had a little bit too much seltzer water or something for dinner or whatever.
Billups.
That's going to be fun hearing it said. Yeah.
It hasn't been that long this time since we recorded, and now we're heading into Lower Decks Week. We're recording this on Sunday, August 2nd, here in Japan anyway. I guess it's August 1st for you there.
Yes. Aren't the billboards and the bus sides, it's Lower Decks Week. I guess I made that up. But it sounds like it's awesome. They have been doing some promo kits out to various places, little doodad gift bags. So they're spending some money to launch
this. I was going to ask you about that. On August 6th, it's actually going to premiere. But I was going to ask you, actually, because I was scrolling through Twitter earlier, and I did see someone had taken a photo of a billboard like on a roadside of Lower Decks. So are they actually doing those there in the LA area?
Actually, they did. Yes, I took one. Yeah, there's one right at Franklin and Highland in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. There's a big billboard facing to the northwest. So just a little north of Paramount. Right at the corner of one of the church whose interior was used in Star Trek VI for the Starfleet briefing room scene. That was inside a big church. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
Right at the corner where that church is, there's a big billboard up. But they had a Picard premiere sign up there too, so they have a deal with that. Anyway, and people have had them all over town.
The briefing room scene could have been like any random warehouse where we just turn out all the lights and just shine a light on a table.
And it's so important. There's no decor. It's all in the black. That's how important it was.
Yeah.
Only Nixon could go to China. Only Starfleet could meet in a 20th century church. But yeah. Okay. So yes, they are spending. They do care. They do care about Lower Decks. They are promoting it and everybody's excited. And I feel like I was for months and months and months, even before COVID, and people were like, Oh, Picard. And oh, Discovery. Oh, 930. Oh, and I kept going, I'm waiting for Lower Decks. I'm really waiting for Lower Decks. And now it's the trendy Wendy thing to all be waiting on Lower Decks, which is fine. Which is fine.
So, Larry, are you truly excited about Lower Decks?
No, seriously, I am. And I know Lower Decks gives a lot of fans cause to pause. They're trepidatious about it because it's animated and they think it's going to be like, you know, wacky. But a couple of things. When they first announced it, just overall, and I've said this for years, I will be thrilled. And even though some people are a little hesitant about having it be a kid's show, and we've seen the trailer, you know, with some carefully located black bars here and there. but, I mean, yes, people raise your kids however you want to, but I'm not – I mean, it's at least a 12 and 13-year-olds and older, what if not a little bit younger than that. And it's exuberant, and, you know, it's animation-style intensity. So it's like when you're a voice actor and you're doing that, everything is heightened and more intense and pointed and focused. And that's the tone of animation. And and it's fine. It's overdue, but we will at last be getting to – whatever you want to call it, a young adult audience, a kid's audience, whatever you want to say, we're going to be in that realm. And then Prodigy, thank God we can finally say Prodigy officially now without being coy about it, but because it's been out there as an unguarded secret for a year and a half or 2 years.
Yeah.
And that's a different tone, and that probably will actually hit a young adult, younger, sincerely young without being snarky Adult Swim-ish. But, and this isn't really Adult Swim. It's not that out there. But they've... that trailer, the Batleth, and he's waiting naked in the shuttle pod for his date or whatever. That's kind of interesting. But anyway, I'm going round about the thing here to say, yes, I've been excited for it, but also because the showrunner, when they announced it as Mike McMahan, the rest of the world went, oh, the Rick and Morty guy. And I said, no, that's the guy that did, not only did he do the Warped season 8 Twitter feed into a book deal, which is like the epitome of how you're supposed to take social media and make money on it. Good for him. He's not just the Rick and Morty guy. He's the guy that walked up to me at my little temporary four-hour table at San Diego Comic-Con 5 years ago so I would sign his next-gen companion at the time and saying, oh, I just – and he says, oh, I just – and I did an interview with him about Warped, and it's up on my YouTube and blog. And when he was named the showrunner for this, I totally missed the Rick and Morty thing. And that's blown up and good for him and good for, you know, people, fans are that. And when I saw he was – I was like, yes, this is going to be awesome. And people were so worried about this. And who is this guy? He's going to Rick and Mortify Starfleet and Star Trek. And I'm like, no, no. He did the parody. He did the sense of humor is on display. The love of the show and the background and the universe is already up. So I was thrilled to have Mike do it. It was great to have somebody a new name that somebody that I knew and somebody wanted me to sign something. So I've been really excited to see. And everything I've seen, all the promotional stuff has been right in line with what I thought. And the ones, and I'll shut up after this one. The one surprise that I've had with it has been a pleasant one, which is that when the more we've seen of these trailer, the backgrounds didn't give it away, but the trailer and now the first scene that's been out, they've done an incredible job of being canonical with the backgrounds. It's animation and the props details, right? The pad, and there's 47s in the pad. Yes. In the face you see, but you know, everything from the Batleth to that's, I mean, I don't think that's an official Romulan ale bottle she's holding. But, and they had one
that's
in
Picard. That's Romulan whiskey.
They had
Larry,
one in. Oh, okay. Okay, then. Then they changed the line when they drew it differently. But I really, I'm, and I know that Dr. Aaron is, McDonald is sciencing these, and Dayton, I think David Alan Mack, too, is also, they've got.
Yeah, David Mack is consulting, yeah.
Yeah, David Mack is doing consulting for Canon. So I'm, and I'm waiting to see, and it's like, it's kind of like watching Sabotage and the motorcycle advertise, what, Beyond, and people were like, it's a Star Wars-y trailer. Right. I think that trailer was also heightened, and once we get into the flow of an actual show, away from a trailer mentality. Yeah. So, no, I'm very excited. And again, getting to that audience that we have not, unless Trekkies reproduced organically, getting to that youth audience and seeing Star Trek pop up at cross-genre Comic-Cons and seeing that kind of excitement for Star Trek starting young and sticking earlier. Mm-hmm. But I think the show will be quality too, besides that. We're about to find out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're a bit more excited about it than I am. I'm looking forward to it, as I have mentioned elsewhere.
What
a little
does
bit,
that mean, Chris?
I'll explain in a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. So let's come back around to this then, because there's a lot of good stuff there. And before we like really dive deep into our Lower Decks discussion,
too late.
We did have one news item to talk about. And these were the Emmy nominations that came out. The Television Academy, they announced their nominations for the 72nd Annual Emmy Awards.
In our low-key Corona time way that everything is happening in now.
Yeah, right. And Star Trek has 6, 5 for Picard, 1 for Short Treks. And I was curious to get your thoughts on them. And the... I was just thinking, like, two of them for Picard or for my favorite episode of Star Trek, Picard, Stardust City Rag. You know how much I love that one because of the wonderful opening that just fills you with joy as you get ready for what is, for me, the most out of place part of the entire story. However, the things that they're nominated for, I totally get. They're nominated for outstanding period and or character hairstyling. And also for outstanding period and or character makeup, non-prosthetic, for that episode. And yeah, definitely I can see that. You know, I think back years and years where...
You've got all the aliens in the bar. Yes.
Like when you look back at Star Trek's Emmy nominations over the years, you often see those episodes from, especially from Deep Space Nine and Voyager, which are episodes that... The episodes themselves are not necessarily ones that you think of as the great episodes, but you know, the makeup work, the creative work was really excellent in those episodes. And so this is continuing that trend.
Yeah. I think it's almost like visual effects is the one thing that you, because if you think it was a slam bang show in the old days, that would be the slam bang visual effects. And it's hard to disconnect that. But things like makeup and hair or sound design and sound editing, and it's, if you're in that field, you may go, what was the big sound mix design? Well, yeah, but they were in this cave and it had 47 channels and you could distinctly hear the 47 different ambient wind breezing through that or whatever it is. And those are the feels that that's also the Emmys that most Star Trek, because I'm going to talk about this in a second, but most of the Emmy wins that Star Trek has had are in the quote unquote creative Emmys, like acting, directing and writing aren't creative, but the so-called creative. So yeah, sound mixing here on Picard and makeup and hair and some of the, and there's the other audio sound recording, I think it is.
Yeah. Sound editing and sound mixing.
Yeah. Okay. But those are where Star Trek has racked up Emmys in the past and nominations and then Emmys too. So those are so good on Picard. They hire good professional people that are known in the industry and they're turning out, you know.
Well, and for good reason too. You know, when you watch TNG in HD remastered now, or when you watch Enterprise, you can see the quality of that work. And of course, at the time when the, or here, But visually, especially like with the makeup, with the prosthetics, when you know at the time that they knew they were putting that content out in SD, and they knew that they could take shortcuts if they wanted to, and the audience would probably never know, but they didn't. And of course, their peers looking at the work, knowing the people, recognize the quality of that work. And you see that with the new series as well, and just the really, truly amazing work that they do.
Well, all those guys that I was privileged to talk to, and we still do, you know, the Mike Westmores and the Dan Currys and the blah, blah. I mean, they all have such pride. It's pride in their work. They're thrilled to be working on Star Trek, and they're thrilled to have the, and to be given, and like they used to talk about the orchestras for the soundtrack recording. Star Trek was the only show that was doing, you know, 30 and 40 piece orchestra recordings anymore. So the old, in the Berman era, it wasn't original series standout thematic tunes, but the orchestras doing it were like the biggest in Hollywood for years and years and years. And that was like old school. But those people, and I think it, the longer they worked there, the more they had a sense that, just like the original series people, what they were doing, they took pride in it in the moment and, you know, for award season and all of that. But they also knew that 10 and 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years from now, people would still be looking at their work and wondering how well it held up and all that. And I, over the years, I would ask them, you know, like, how does it feel, or has that sunk in that 40 years, like we're talking about the original series, that 50 years from now, people are going to be looking at your work that way. And then, and the Berman era went 18 years from the beginning to the end of that's a whole generation from Farpoint to the digital era coming into Enterprise. So anyway. So they're continuing that trend, whether they're coming out of the Toronto area or they're coming out of the LA area or they're scattered around because they can. Yeah, they've got a great community.
So to give everyone a background of who Star Trek is up against, for outstanding period and or character hairstyling, Picard is nominated for Stardust City Rag and is competing against The Crown from Netflix, Hollywood from Netflix, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel from HBO.
Which I love, yes.
And Pose from FX. And outstanding period and or character makeup, again, Stardust City Rag. Also Hollywood, The Marvelous Maisel and Pose. But the other one here is FX's American Horror Story 1984. And then outstanding prosthetic makeup for a series, limited series, movie, or special is for Absolute Candor, where we actually get to see a good bit of the Romulans and the Romulan nuns.
and species diversity one, in Romulans. I don't know if the Emmy voters are going to appreciate, but as Star Trek folks, we appreciate. Yeah.
Yeah, they're probably not going to appreciate, but that was one of the wonderful things about that episode, right? That we finally did get to see that diversity in the Romulan population, which of course in reality would most likely be the case with any alien race, but rarely shown.
We got flatheads.
Yeah. Some people said no to bangs. Just say no to bangs.
I'm just glad to have, you know, smooth heads and head ridges people all in one, culture, species.
That's actually, I thought Picard did a nice job with like a clever explanation for the head ridges and the smooth heads without making a big deal about it at all.
Chris, I've told you this,
it's
right?
Just there.
About my reaction to that. Yeah. We're at the premiere in LA. I'm sitting next to Dave Rossi. Yeah. We're watching this. Well, two things hit me. One was the first time they panned up and you realized the cube had Romulan ships flying in and out of it. And they're obviously Romulan.
Yeah, yeah.
And very, very subtly, the music, this is a little bit of a left turn, but the music was achingly slow, but after a few notes, you realized it was dum, 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 dum. And I did this slow turn to Dave, and I'm like, is that the original series Romulan theme? And he was like, yes, it is. Yeah. I was like, oh my God. But the other thing was the third episode, when they're attacked and assaulted in his office. And she taps that guy and says, nope, he's a Southern Northerner, just like you. And that, it's like, it's a nothing. It's a total throwaway line.
Yeah.
And it's like 1988 and the neutral zone is going by and Data says, oh, it's 2364. And I swear to God, 99% of the world, that was just another line. But I fell off my chair back home. I was like, my God, they finally attached a calendar year to their time. That's the way I was with this. It was like, did she just retcon explain the whole species diversity of Romulans with four words or five words? And we didn't need a two-part episode and the convoluted, you know, it's like the whole poor Klingon forehead saga took, you know, abortive attempts to explain it.
Exactly right.
Over poor trials and tribulations they were going to do it then, and they didn't, and they threw the line out that made it worse, right?
But
and here she does it with five words, and I was like, and it had nothing to do with the plot. Yeah. That's the other thing. It was just a line.
That's the best
kind of canonizing. Yeah. And I was like, and so I was like,
exactly,
that night I tweeted and I said, okay, guys, I saw one line. I'm not going to spoil it. I just want to see when you're able to watch the third episode, if you notice a line has nothing to do with the plot, and it may have just solved 30 years of, you know, of a little bit of mini angst for fans. And people are like, well, and Holly Amos said, are you talking about Northerners? And I said, yes. And so like she got it too. And then, I didn't want to tell the world. And then when that went by, a couple of people saw it.
Yeah.
But yes.
Yeah.
That's the awesome. And I'm like, that has Kirsten Beyer's hands all over it. I just am betting that was.
I thought it was a brilliant way to
do
it.
I'm sorry we got off on that.
It just resolves. No, this is what's interesting, I think, to talk about. It's a brilliant way to explain it. And now the thing with Trials and Tribulations, I always liked where Worf just says, it's a long story and we don't talk about it with outsiders. You know, it's just like, don't worry about it. and let's move on.
But
and
it acknowledged
for years,
it.
I thought
it acknowledged it, which
but it acknowledged
that blew
it,
up
right.
the whole
yeah,
thing
yeah.
of it's just budget. Ever just ignore
yeah.
it? It's like, well, you can't now because they acknowledged it in canon.
It's true. You're right. You're right. Although I always just took it as, okay, they acknowledged it and they just said to the fans, it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. And then many years went by and people just thought, yeah, it's cute. Worf just said, yeah, don't worry about it. And then Enterprise comes along and it's like, we've got to do two episodes to explain why there are no forehead ridges. And the episodes are fine.
Chris.
I like the episodes, but it's like not necessary.
Chris.
It's an unnecessary Chris. Time spent explaining something
Chris.
That's simply a budgetary
Chris.
Thing. That was sort of the way I took
Chris.
It for a long time. But Chris. Here, this was done really
Look,
well.
Look, so it's 96. It's Tribulations. You're having enough fun anyway.
Yeah.
It's the 30th anniversary yeah. of Star Trek. You're doing this special show, yeah. which is even more awesome, I'm sorry, than the Voyager special show. It's way more awesome.
It was, yeah.
And you've got
course,
two
yeah.
fanboys writing it. You've got Renee and Ron, Renee Echevarria, Ron Moore writing it. And they're hell-bent to
yeah.
finally... For one thing, you've got... Worf's Klingons, and you're matching film with the bar fight with K7. You got so
right.
you kind of got
yeah,
to say it. It's like, so why not mine it for a little? Either you're going to fix a canon thing or the comedy, which is what came through. Also, you had a comic moment, or
yeah.
or gosh, both. And they sat down to do it,
yeah.
and Rick was like, "Nope, we can't." Like Rick was like, "I don't I, like. Do we have to dwell on the original series too much? And we don't want to do too much. And don't bog it down with background that's going to, you know, the whole thing about it's going to, it's too much for a casual viewer." And so they backed off and just gave Worf the funny line, which doesn't really solve the problem. Didn't really tell you anything except that it really you didn't imagine it. It did exist, and you can't blow it off as oh, it's a budget
mm-hmm.
thing. Quit worrying about
mm-hmm.
it. So that's like it took. You know, so from 79 to 96. So, okay,
yeah.
almost 20 years. But then it took almost 20 years or more for this, you know, to come back and explain, not 20 years, sorry, a few more years, 10 years, 8 years to come back and come up with a way. But again, you had Manny and Mike, Manny Cota, Mike Sussman, when you got two fanboys with the keys who were in the position of power
yeah.
to do something about it. And 10 years of wondering, now, what did they do wrong? How did Ron and Renee go wrong with their big chance? You know, this doesn't come around often. And they had the big chance and they
yeah.
grabbed at the brass ring on the merry-go-round of exploding Star Trek, of Klingon foreheads, and they missed the brass ring and we're going to grab it. And oh, they made a drama out of it. And okay, fine. But anyway, that's why all of that, it's a whole
it's
saga. That's why I'm
yeah.
saying Kirsten, I don't know who wrote them, but I'm saying,
yeah.
or who consulted, I'm just saying he's a stubborn northerner just like you, or whatever. Seven words does what 30
yeah.
years of
yeah.
angst and a couple of attempts do. So anyway,
right.
that's why I thought it was
yeah.
brilliant.
Yeah.
It was so simple.
It's brilliant. And this, everyone, is why we think Star Trek Picard is very deserving of its Emmy nomination for Outstanding Prosthetic Makeup for Absolute
That was
candor.
The long way around. Sorry, guys.
Romulans. And also, Larry, I just want to...
boring, and Michael Piller is smiling from somewhere.
I just want to note right now
yeah.
that Amy Nelson is listening to this and dying over our attempts to do math on air.
Well, yeah, I didn't sit down and script it. Well, you know, 96 to 05, I can go back and think about things. Or wait, was it written in 05 or was it written
yeah.
in 04? Come on, Amy, give me a break. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
But there's one other Emmy.
However,
I don't want to short circuit you, but there's one other Emmy nom here
okay.
if we're ready for it.
Yeah.
Are we?
There is. But before
okay.
before we get
That's
to that, I just
want
to
yes.
say that for this category... Picard is up against, as I already
oh, yes,
mentioned,
yes,
American
yes.
Horror Story, Hollywood.
Stiff competition always.
And Pose, but they're also up against The Mandalorian from Disney Plus. So
Battle of the Franchises.
There was a lot of good work done on The Mandalorian as well. So
mm-hmm.
this could be a pretty tough category, I think.
See, the hair category, I just love Mrs. Maisel. And it's period. It's brash and buoyant early, you know, like JFK era
mm-hmm.
60s. It's just very out there and they have women. It's New York and they're on vacation. I mean, you know, they're all over the world. And I mean, all these are worthy nominations,
mm-hmm.
obviously. And they all take different, Westworld is kind of a period things sometimes. But I'm just, I'm hardly a handicapper on Emmys. But the first, my first blush on this is almost that Mrs. Maisel will get, if Star Trek can't have it, that Mrs. Maisel will. Star Trek's take is like everybody else is dealing with period pieces often. Or, you know, the horrible run that, you know, like Ozark or Stranger Things. Well, Stranger Things is genre. But Picard is like making it up. Oh, look, it's like future hair. So on one hand, they don't rest on how well did you historically recreate this. But it's like, what's the imagination? Totally about imagination. Like, you know, Bejazel's hairstyle and her, you know, the people in the bar.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing is what they rely on. In that way, Star Trek needing like its alien hairstyles, it's like the cost of living, I believe, got an Emmy for hair. And we're like, cost of living? But you think about all the wackadoos in the holodeck around the mud bath. You know, all the juggler and the point, you know. Anyway, so some to your earlier point, sometimes these episodes that we're like, what? But they're the ones, especially in things like makeup and hair and much the visuals, much less like sound editing and mixing and recording, those kinds of things. But good luck to all of these.
So those are the visuals. Those are the makeups. And there are the two for sound, outstanding sound editing for a comedy or drama series, 1 hour. And Picard is nominated for A in Arcadia Ego Part 2. Going up against The Crown, The Boys, which is an Amazon Prime Video series, Stranger Things from Netflix, and Better Call Saul from FX. And then also outstanding sound mixing for a comedy or drama series. And get this, Larry, it's also 1 hour.
Well, that's
for A in Arcadia Ego the industry, Part 2.
Yeah. The Emmys in America are famous for, you go back to the 50s and or the 40s, the categories keep shifting partly because what's the dynamic of TV, but they keep trying to, like, should sitcom people in 30-minute dramas have to compete with 60-minute dramas? And there have been over the years, before even the dramedies, you go back, well, Have Gun, Will Travel that Gene wrote for was I keep forgetting it wasn't a 1 hour. Like, dramas aren't always automatically 60 minutes, you know, an hour. They had 30-minute dramas. And variety series versus or a short, all these categories, it's been a joke over the years. The Emmys keep shifting, you know, categories around. So,
well, from my perspective as a viewer, I don't think comedy and drama should be in the same category. Personally, because the subject matter is so different. Generally speaking, you know, I prefer to see them be separate categories. But anyway, Picard is nominated in there as well, going up against the marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Ozark from Netflix, Stranger Things, and then HBO's Westworld. So we'll see where they go. And then the sixth one is Short Treks, which is nominated for Outstanding Short Form Comedy or Drama Series, competing against Better Call Saul, Employee Training, Legal Ethics with Kim Wexler.
See, a one-off short.
The Good Place Presents, The Selection from NBC, Most Dangerous Game from Quibi, and Reno 911 from Quibi. I think it's interesting that, it's already interesting that in these Emmys that Apple Plus and Disney Plus are getting nominations, but Quibi is getting multiple nominations as well. So the industry is really changing.
Well, it's industry changing, and also they're adapting to people trying to do something in COVID time, and they're spending some money and a lot of, you know, they're not just blow off. Some of these things that have been Zoom fun have had people worked on them and got paid. They're not just fans blowing off, you know, doing a goofball parody.
Of course,
and they're trying to find a way to reward special COVID time and all, but some of these things are promotional bits and people and money and time and talent spent on very professional short form. So this is the way that they're, you know, it's what a coincidence, what great timing that this category comes along just in time for Short Treks to be invented and to, you know, have a place where it can go to be recognized. It's an honor just to be nominated. But here's the thing, Chris, if they win this Emmy, which I'd love it if they did, it'll just kill me. That of all the years, rightly or wrong, you know, the original series was nominated, the first two seasons were nominated for drama series, not individual people and all, you know, writers, directors, or tech. I mean, they had to, Leonard Nimoy was nominated all 3 years, I believe, for supporting actor in a drama. People forget that after all the great years of having Brent and Sir Patrick and all these wonderful actors who should have been nominated and weren't because it was a syndicated show or it was right. on UPN and, you know, all the snobbery of the industry, whatever.
Or it was science fiction.
It was science fiction, yes. Yeah. Science fiction. And it was a sequel in the beginning. They looked at it as a sequel, which was, you know, horrible. But The Next Gen finally got a series nomination for seventh season. You know, didn't win, but they got a nomination.
I remember that well. Yep.
And it's amazing. And nobody else has ever had been nominated as a series, like the overall product. The original series had two, didn't win. Next Gen's finale year had one. The only other time that a series, well, the only there was one other time that people overlook in the category of children's and Saturday morning, the animated series was nominated and won. The only time Star Trek has ever won a series Emmy was for the animated series. So it would be hysterical if they win this. And I mean, I would like to see it happen to the live action and the drama series and all that. But it'll be amazing if they win this. And after all this time, the two series Emmys that Star Trek has ever won over all these years and hours is for the animated series and Short Treks. That would be.
It would be quite odd. I wanted to ask you about how you feel about the category, because what I find interesting is that Short Treks is, it's so, like, episode to episode, it's so different. You know, it's sort of like, it's sort of like a laboratory to play around with different ideas. And you've got some that are animated. You've got some that are live action. Most are live action. You've got one that has almost no dialogue. It's music in Children of Mars. And it's such an unusual collection of work, but it is a series, right? They all are Short Treks, but compared with the series that they're competing against, it's a little
and
bit different.
And it's an anthology, you know, it's a mini anthology or it's a lab series, the way you say, which is its best strength. And I'm thrilled to see it there.
Yeah.
They can try out writers and directors and actors and characters and techniques and styles and, you know, like two different kinds of animation and all of that. And I'm not up with the other nominees in this, but it really, again, it feels like this is a catch-all, partly to respond to the way things are promoted online with shorts, like Ron Moore with his Galactica had those short pieces, and those were kind of revolutionary 10, 12 years ago that they produced those shorts. They got into an issue later on about paying and billing people involved, which shows you the problems if you get into that. But they've come up with this category to kind of reward that. And it's even more, again, it's even more heightened in Corona time when people are looking at, you know, small projects and things. But they're, yeah, it's a combination of things that are meant for the like web direct, but they're promotional pieces for a show or a franchise. And anyway, it'll be fun. It'll be, I wish them the best. The fact that they're not it's not really a series. It's more, like you said, an anthology or a lab. We'll see if we can pick up a vibe on how the voting goes. You know, they never say who came in second on these. I'm sure the accounting firm or whoever it is that does the thing, two people know, but they'll take it to their grave.
And also, Larry, next year in the Emmys, there's going to be a new category, Outstanding Zoom Gathering.
Oh, okay.
So I think these moments where the casts of various Star Trek series have come together for online
That would be interesting.
Events,
yeah,
those will be dominated next year.
Seriously, the Webbies or somebody like that might have a category for outstanding, you know, virtual panels.
The Webbies, it would make sense. Yeah, I could see that happening.
But no, I want to see the Emmys do if it's an official studio promoted thing, whether it's like the Comic-Con at home or it's their own promo campaign or whatever. It's like a whole new world. And every actor and writer and director and lighting guy gets to say, and are we getting paid for it?
All right. Exactly. That's what they'll say. All right. So the Creative Arts Emmy Awards will take place in early September. I don't know the exact date for that right now. You know, they're always kind of
done
separately.
Does it matter? It'll be somewhere in the blur, Chris.
But the big Emmy Awards are scheduled for September 20th and should be shown on ABC, although we'll have to see exactly what form everything takes as the coronavirus continues to be a problem. Particularly there in the U.S. All right.
Yes.
So, Larry, let's go back to Lower Decks now. That's going to be our kind of main thing here. And we've talked a bit about it, you know, at the start of the show. You already mentioned Rick and Morty, and also Mike is doing this Hulu animated series called Solar Opposites now, which I haven't watched yet, but I've seen the splash screen for it in Hulu when I go in to watch Celebrity Family Feud, and I haven't checked it out yet. So, which reminds me, we really COVID's need a Celebrity Family Feud where we have like the casts of different Star Trek series together. Yeah.
I'm surprised, you know, we need to pump it up here, whatever the new generation of, you know, live events winds up being. I mean, it would work for Zoom, too, for Zoom panels. Uh-huh. But whoever is going to run things, assemble, produce, whether it's a convention or CBS Takes a Lead or one of the con companies or whatever, that would be perfect for Zoom land, you would think. But it would be even funnier live, obviously. But yeah.
That would work. All right. So he's doing the Solar Opposites show. And then you mentioned earlier the other things that he's done. And so now we have him doing this Star Trek animated series, which, except for the two short treks, which we just talked about, that were animated, it'll be the first time for animated Star Trek since 73, 74. And it follows the support crew serving on one of Starfleet's least important ships, the USS Cerritos, in the year 2380. And speaking of the name of the ship, so I was doing a little bit of reading and I came across this piece on Screen Rant, I believe it was. And they mentioned that, well, first of all, they mentioned that it's the name of what they called a blandly unimportant city in the greater Los Angeles area. But they also pointed out that there is an auto dealership there that has a really catchy jingle, which I believe that you know how to sing, Larry.
Well, it's, yes, it's one of those things that you know if you're there. It's what is it? It's like, take 605 to South Street, Cerritos Auto Square. That's there, and it's been around for like 20 years. Yes, there's a state college there. There's Cerritos.
Okay, so that's what they've named the ship after. It reminds me, there's
That part about in the bland checkerboard of Southern California with a billion suburbs around LA and Orange County. Yes, exactly. But you know what the class name of the ship is?
It's the California class, right?
It's the California class. So I keep waiting to see. I want to see all the sister ships where it's like, oh, look, it's the USS Cerrito goes over and meets the USS...
Big Sur.
Big Sur. No. That's too exciting. That's scenic. There's like the waves, the seashore. No, it's going to be bland. Oh, now I'm going to get in trouble for saying, you know, the whatever. The USS La Habra. The USS... Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
You know, your commercial reminds me, Larry, that in Japan, we have this commercial that's been on for like 30 years. It's for a piano tuner. And it's just these women in these like really tight black and white suits dancing on a keyboard, piano keyboard. And it's a jingle. And it's been around forever and they never change it. So
it's the little black cocktail. It's like the little black cocktail dress they're wearing, Chris. It's timeless.
It's timeless. Yeah. It's timeless. Okay. So anyway, rewinding a little bit here as we went on the Southern California sidetrack for the name of the show. You can add this, by the way, Larry.
It's educational. Educational. Now the whole world will stop mispronouncing. We're doing a public good here.
And also, you can now add, when you do your LA area tours of places related to Star Trek, you can take people to the auto dealer now. And you can teach them how to sing the jingle.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think there's probably at least 47 versions on YouTube somewhere, but yes.
It's not the same as actually being there, Larry. It's not the same.
On my side of the room in the car as we drive by.
Okay. So we talked about at the top of the show a little bit, you know, your thoughts on the concept of Lower Decks and it being animated. Mm-hmm. And I think before we shifted to the Emmy talk, we were kind of getting into what the stories might be like. And I mentioned that I'm not excited, but I'm interested, you know, to see where we're going with this. And I think that for me, when I watch the trailer right now, what I see is something where they've, you know, they're taking these comedic moments and they're pulling them out of the episodes and they're stitching them all together because this has been promoted as a comedy, right? This is Star Trek. It's animated. Mm-hmm. It's a comedy. My hope is that at the core of these stories, we have a real Star Trek type story where there's some meaning to it and there's some commentary to it. And I think that's going to be there. But until I see it, I can't really know for sure what they're going to do. One thing I've been doing over the past week is I have the animated series, the original animated series on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. And I've been going through and watching those. And, you know, what really stands out, I mean, the animation is terrible. Although for me, I kind of have a soft spot for it because I grew up with that animation style.
And simplified 70s Saturday morning filmation.
Exactly.
Let's not call it horrible. It has a historic precedent. Okay.
Compared to some of the stuff we see
now. And it's a hell of a lot better than Lassie's Rescue Rangers and whatever else was. It's just like original series. It's like, before you criticize it, go back and look at what the competition was doing at the time.
That's true. But the thing about those episodes is that the stories themselves were truly a continuation of the types of stories we got on the original series, which was wonderful. The dialogue's not always great. Yesterday, I watched The Slaver Weapon, and that was incredible dialogue, let's just say that. And if you don't know what I mean, please go watch it. You can watch it on Netflix or Hulu or CBS All Access or wherever. Just go watch this episode.
And at the same breath, when I'm saying thank you, Dorothy, she didn't do the last, like the little short second season. She was not associated with that. Yeah. And even the original one she was associated with, and we've gotten into this on the Trek Files, she was like cut out of the loop. Star Trek was so out of the mainstream of the way filmation did stuff. Like writers wrote a script. Here it is. Bang. Now we're going to go animate it and draw it. Why would a writer just making his little bucks doing Saturday, probably using a pen name because he didn't want his real WGA friends knowing he was writing Saturday morning animation on the sly, you know, on the whatever. But here she's actually acting like it's a worthwhile thing and is miffed and can't penetrate the Filmation system where she's like going to produce it to the end like you would think a head writer even on a, you know, on a animation. She didn't see the final cuts and there would be errors, there would be visual things, and she didn't have final say about lines and editing and syncing. So even as we say, but Dorothy Fontana was producing the animated, when you judge that final project, she often had, it was out of her hands, which was wrong and sad and a symptom of Star Trek trying to blow up, you know, trying to stretch an envelope that had never been stretched before. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a different situation now. Mike is the head guy and it's all his baby.
Yeah.
With, you know, with the rest of CBS and Kurtzman Enterprises and everything involved. But,
So what I'm hoping is that we're going to get those kind of meaningful stories with some meaningful commentary, of course, updated for 2020, because a lot of the commentary in the original animated series was very much a continuation of that late 60s, you know, commentary. As for the series, though, I have to see it when it comes out on Thursday. I'm looking forward to seeing the first episode and seeing what the real story element is like, because that's what's going to make or break it for me. Because for me so far, the humor that I've seen in the trailers isn't really connecting with me. There are a few moments where I've laughed a little bit, but it's not quite my kind of humor.
Well, I've seen, again, it's a trailer and I enjoyed it, but I, you know, at the risk of being too rough on it, the whole thing where she's got the Romulan whiskey, not Romulan ale, because it's not the right bottle, but it's still blue.
I thought Romulans only made ale. They're only allowed, like by galactic treaty, they're only allowed to make
Illegal ale, right? Right. If you make something else, it won't be illegal. Wait, what? No, it's the scene where she's, you know, all bouncing off of. I mean, he's nerdy even among a ship of nerds. The fact that he's rehearsing his captain's log is a cute little idea.
Yeah.
And that's cute. But her bouncing off the ceiling because she's drunk and, you know, hits him with that's I'm like, okay, I know this is going to be animation and it's going to be a heightened comic sense, but am I losing respect for her? And like, you're somewhere on the spectrum between, like, you know, rod up your derriere, you know, uptight, buttoned down kind of young officer. You know, Kirk was a stack of book with legs, remember? I always loved how eventually when you connect your dots enough, Kirk and Picard were exactly opposite. Picard was the rabble-rouser who got stabbed in a bar fight.
Yeah.
And Kirk was the stack of books with legs, and then they wind up being different as they become mature captains. Anyway, and you could say that, but you know, a piece of this is when I, most of the trailer I thought was funny, the bit that he's in the shuttle and she surprises him. It's like those are the two extremes for me. Her being drunk and taking a Bat'leth and whacking him and until they both, it kind of like shocked them out of her. It's a comedic, the frozen scream, but, and then the bit where she finds, but the rest of it all kind of seemed within the realm. And it's like, well, if we're seeing two extremes here, I'm just so overwhelmed by the, like you do these freeze frames. Here's Tendi, the Orion science officer slash nurse, I guess. She's in sick bay medical. And she's in this black, she's in a black ops thing, just like Worf and Crusher and Picard when Picard gets captured by Cardassians.
Oh, right.
They're at Minos Corva or whatever, or they're rehearsing for it. And she's got a perfect first contact phaser rifles, you know, one of them. There were three different ones, but all the ship designs and the backgrounds and the pads and the accoutograms and the, you know, so much stuff. And if it wasn't seen before, it's been extrapolated. So many, you know, you see close-ups of props. Her phaser, it is kind of funny when she says, I was only set to, okay, maybe not.
Oh, right.
You know.
Yeah, I was set to Stein.
That's a cute moment. Part of this is, I think back to when they first had, when they were trying to write, originally you saw him 1 year out of the academy. Go back to original series, Chekhov. Walter Koenig, Chekhov, bad Russian accent, everything. And they're trying to have him be the young Kirk, the young heart. He's the Spock Kirk in training, but he runs off and, you know, he gets it. He's hot-headed and he gets in trouble. He gets shot and specked with the gun. He, you know, he runs afoul of Klingons and whatever else. He's goofing around with Spock in the Trouble with Tribbles briefing, right? You know, being hyperbolic. So it's kind of like, well, if he's an example of a great, well, then you've got Tilly, my gosh. So somewhere on that Tilly Chekhov, here's a cadet, here's a first year ensign spectrum, and weighing them against that. But, you know, so I, you know, I'm willing to see it leaven out. But the other thing, as far as an arc for the series, we know that this is a second contact ship, which on one hand makes it sound like is a perfect thing for, it's not the most important thing, but it is a typical thing. I mean, to me, the bland, unimportant ship would be the ships that are doing fifth contact. or something, you know. I can see where second contact is an important follow up, which I think is, I think they're saying a lot of that is promo hype.
I think,
but they have to have some legitimacy under the comedy,
right?
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And we have all the senior staff who are all going to be competent, I'm sure. The captain and you know, first officer, and all that with their quirks, the Bajoran security staff.
Well, Larry, the fifth contact ship is the one that goes in and says, okay, so what kind of alcoholic beverages do you have that we've never heard of before and that you might be willing to share with us? Because I have to tell you, we're going to have to pick the best one, because if you become a Federation member, you've got to get rid of all of them but one. You're only allowed one.
Pick your one.
Yeah.
Hey,
because
guys,
otherwise, you know, fandom is just going to freak out.
The encyclopedia / Memory Alpha world land out there is only big enough for one liquor per planet culture. Yes, you're
one
only
a liquor per planet. Exactly.
Yeah. No. So the fifth contact ships will be known as that'll actually be known as the hospitality contact or the tourism contact team. Yeah.
It's
and about your resorts.
It's going to be that effing hospitality hologram ship. I hate that hospitality
They're rough,
hologram.
They're rough. They inspect every toothpick on the plate. They are rough, man. Okay.
Yeah, they just send holograms at that point. They're like, fourth contact, we still send biological entities. But fifth contact, it's just photons, man. We're done with you. We're just going to send our holograms now.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Your Orion olives were not up to par in that sidecar.
See, Orion olives would make sense because they're green, Larry.
Oh, you caught that, did you, Chris? Okay.
Except the Northerners, they pit their olives, but in the South, they leave the pits in.
Just like a stubborn Southerner.
A stubborn Southerner, yes.
Leave those pits in. Yeah.
So what do you think about the collection of characters that they've put together? I mean, we don't know much about them yet, but I guess what I think is interesting is that, like, typically in Star Trek, and it's kind of the whole point of the Lower Decks thing, is that you have the bridge crew, which sometimes includes ensigns. I'm rewatching The Next Generation right now, and I got to the point where Picard's like, well, you know, Riker, I think we're going to have to make Wesley an acting ensign, even though up until 10 minutes ago, we refused to even use his first name, and we only called him the boy. And then Harry Kim is off in the corner going, my God, man, you're going to make him an ensign? And, like, I can't even get promoted after all these years. Well, what do I have to do? So anyway, you've got the bridge crew and then you've got all these other officers. So, you know, kind of like fleshing out a balance between them here. What do you think about what they've done?
I think so. You know, and what's fun, I may have said this somewhere along the way, sometime when I was behind a mic somewhere after the initial announcement and the kind of the sketch of what the show would be, and that there would be Upper Decks and Lower Decks. And I, you know, you almost want to jump into Upstairs, Downstairs here, you know, or Downton Abbey or something. Mm-hmm. But I also am thinking of, you know, the original premise of the West Wing was purely going to be the West Wing employees, and the president would never even be seen to keep it from being, because it's easy to do stories where the president's involved, right, with the president and the first lady and all that. They wanted to keep the focus on the Lower Decks of the West Wing. And eventually, very quickly, they figured out that wouldn't, you know, or he's only in 5 minutes of the show. But I still kind of sense that dynamic for comedic purposes. And we've seen the episode Lower Decks on Next Gen, which is, for good and bad, the brainchild of this, so the homage, the inspiration for it. But how much we'll see. And we've seen scenes where the young kids, the young ensigns, are getting to mix with their superiors, right? The security chief and the now the chief engineer Yes, we'll see everybody. What I'm excited for is, representation is everything in Star Trek, Chris, because the audience loves to see themselves here. And I'm just thrilled because, speaking of animation over the years, the Doctor is a Cation.
Yeah, yeah.
Drawn a little bit different way, but who's to know? Species diversity, species diversity. See, that comes in handy. But, you know, we're seeing, and Tendi is an Orion, which is cool. And in some of the bits, we've seen Bolians. We've seen Andorians. We've seen Vulcans. Chris, do I have to say, if I've said it once, I've said it a million times. I'm looking at all the clips so far from the trailer, from the first scene. Where are the Tellarites? Where are the Tellarites? Come on, Mike. I thought you weren't going to let me down. I thought you followed me on Twitter.
They're going to be in there somewhere.
Jesus Christ. Andorians, once again, they were born at the same. This is like UPN and the CW. It's like, come on. So
let me ask you this, however.
One takes off and one is left behind.
On the other side of the room, we were looking through all the screen stills that I've created from the trailer, and we were looking at this little guy in the little gold overalls on the planet.
Oh, yes. Where, on the planet.
What if this, like Discovery, you know, they have to redesign the Klingons and the Tellarites and the Andorians.
What if this is
a Lower Deck Tellarite, Larry?
Don't. Then I'm out of here. Forget everything nice I've said about Lower Decks. If this guy that looks like a dull gray version of a short fat Shrek with the ear, the ear things look like they're the pods out of the game that the Katarians were trying to push over everybody. No, let's hope not. His nose doesn't even look piggish, and he doesn't even have biker horns like Discovery. So let's not.
I don't know. If you zoom in a little bit, Larry, I can see a little bit of piggish Tellarite nose there.
I'm not zooming, Chris. I'm just not even going to try. Don't make me hate the show before it debuts, finally. Don't turn me on this one issue. Come on.
Yeah, so
no, it's kudos to them for having a lot of cool. That's what I'm saying. Now I get why it takes 2 years to make one, you know, a season of 10 episodes or whatever. They've really done a great job pads and carry cases and medikits and shuttles and just so much stuff really feels, you know, well done. You know, the original animated series had some wacky backgrounds. This is engineering. Oh, it is?
Right.
Some of those Really? Okay.
Right. It even makes the brewery in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek look normal, right? This is engineering? Well, okay. I mean, I don't know why we have like water tubes flying everywhere around engineering.
Are you sure you weren't doing Frankenstein's lab from the 30s, from Bride of Frankenstein? Are you sure that wasn't what you were using for source material on it?
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So, okay. But yeah, we have, I think we have a good mix of characters here. Mm-hmm. I think
security chief's Bajoran. It's like a Bajoran linebacker, you know, the big guy. So big guy jokes.
Yeah.
And Cordero, the yellow shirt, whether he's really an engineer or he's really in security, because apparently he trains with both. And his little, it's like there's a Kurtzman era, I won't say fetish, fascination with cyborg parts. Like they kept experimenting all through Discovery with having artificially added on, endowed, whatever.
Yeah.
And Arium and Detmer's, you know, thing. And now here's Cordero with his little.
Well, and you've got the guy with the proto Geordi visor type thing that we see sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Oh, well, yes. And here we've got Cordero who's, So it's.
Well, yes. I think what's happening here with Cordero as Ensign Rutherford is that he's just in training.
Oh, so that's the actor. Oops.
Yeah. Well, he's in training so that when the time comes, Sisko can recruit him to fly the stolen Jem'Hadar ship. He's got that little eyepiece over one eye. You know, it's the little view screen so that they can take care of.
So in 2380, they're going to steal it from the Dominion War Museum?
Exactly.
Okay.
There's a time travel element here, Larry. Didn't you read that the third episode is called Temporal Edict?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, and the fourth episode is called Moist Vessels. So I know, right?
which I have said makes me think that they wanted to kind of play it cool at the start. And then they felt like, okay, four episodes in, we're just going to admit what this show is going to be about, what kind of comedy we're going to have. We're going to show you the Moist Vessel.
I don't. Why is it that the more we're talking about this, Chris, the less I want to watch the show now? Come on, but don't. Unless my morbid curiosity kicks. I do want to know what the heck it is that they're phasering off this section of bulkhead here.
So I don't know for sure, but just looking at this, it's interesting creating the stills and looking at them to kind of imagine what this might be. There's the reference to the fact that they are removing the waste from the holodeck.
Mm-hmm. And then here it's green and glowing, which is
but here you've got this giant wall of brown stuff that they're phasing off, and so I don't know if they're connected or not, but I am just wondering again, because I was watching, I started my TNG rewatch, and it's interesting how the concept of the holodeck changed very quickly on The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes just this environment where you just go in and you're just in this other world. And basically the spatial parameters are boundless. You're just,
it's in the tech manual, Chris. It's in the tech manual.
But think of it as a viewer, right? So that's what you're used to seeing. But at the beginning of The Next Generation, you're being shown that the wall's right here. Like, we're right in front of the wall.
Uh-huh.
And then whenever they turn it off, you see the room. And actually, with Lower Decks, we've got that really nice view of what the grid looks like. And since coronavirus started, since the pandemic started, one thing that I did, because I knew I'm going to be stuck in my house for ages, is I finally bought Oculus virtual reality goggles.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really interesting, because one thing that a lot of museums have done is they've started doing like virtual tours of the museums, and you can do it in Oculus.
Yes.
So that's kind of interesting when you have that on your face and you can walk around. But if you think about the holodeck, you're being told at the beginning of The Next Generation that you're in this little room and you're right next to the wall, but you keep walking. Well, does the wall move with you? What how can...
Well, you know, like a tread. Did you see the film version of Hamilton? Stagecraft has had this for decades. So you're just on a treadmill. Doing. You're just on a virtual tread. Yes, yeah.
So
yeah.
That...
No, what so I maybe, like, I like how the holodeck started off as it's your cure for homesickness and also training. And that's all training. It was going to be at first, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And also training. And then Quark said, hold my root beer. I've got a whole nother use for these spaces up here, if you can show you. But right. maybe like the lower deck crew that we're seeing here, as they're phasering stuff off this wall, as they're doing the waste removal and so forth, maybe they're the people who also go and they maintain those treadmills that allow you to continue moving, even though the wall is right in front of you. Something interesting to think about.
That was the split. Yeah. Some people overpowered the treadmill, though. That's what happened there. So it's just.
It's interesting how it evolves. Yeah. So, yeah, as for the characters, yeah, I'm interested to see what they do. And I'm interested to hear the voice acting because actually, I have a number mm-hmm. of friends here in Tokyo who are voice actors. And they largely
is
do.
Is that a big industry in Japan, animation?
Well, of course, animation is, but they do stuff more for video games.
I'm kidding, everybody. I'm totally kidding. Okay.
They do stuff more for video games, which is interesting, especially with devices, you know, like the Nintendo Switch now, where all the languages are on the cartridge, depending on what language your device is in. And so it's mm-hmm. that's actually a good industry if you have someone who's bilingual, like truly fluent in both languages, and you want to have the same, you know, voice for the character mm-hmm. In both languages. So I know people who do that kind of work. So I'm looking forward to hearing the voice acting in here.
I just
as well.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, the only I'll say this. I'm not a huge animation fan. I know it's a huge industry and a huge fandom. And there's mm-hmm. anime and all kinds of animation and redubbed. Mm-hmm. And all that. And at some point, I may be, you know, making a paycheck or two from it down the line. But mm-hmm. of all the names we see here, you know, like, you know, the cast, they're all active. They've all got their credits. So they've mm-hmm. got Jerry O'Connell, I know, from like live acting. Mm-hmm. It's funny that, you know, goes back to some of the same movies. Or anyway, I'm thrilled to hear the and everybody, they've been doing publicity. They've done the bits now since Comic-Con. They did the panel. People are starting to get to know them, and they're doing promotional bits that are out there, including the chief engineer, who isn't in the 4 and 4 classic, you know, I'm squeezed in over here at the side. Mm. But, and yeah, the engineer, Andy Billups, in case you didn't hear. What just caught my eye was I knew it registered that Yosemite is the name on this shuttlecraft where she's yeah. doing. And that kind of grated on me. The blast doors. I was like, is she into the Romulan ale again? Is that how we're explaining this one? But. but the name of the shuttle is Yosemite. So I'm yeah. like, so is every shuttle, you know how they love their naming patterns for shuttles yeah. and runabouts. Yeah. It's like, so is every shuttle on the Cerritos going to be named for a California river or a California national park? Cause there's several, you know, it's like, yeah. or is the whole California class naming its shuttles for California landmarks? I don't know.
I think that's what it is. And it's like, Apple's naming scheme for macOS right now, every release is named mm-hmm. after some kind of landmark in California. Maybe here there are other classes. You know, there's like the Alabama class, and there's a shuttle called the Lick Skillet. And there's one called Intercourse because there's a town called Intercourse, Alabama. And
of course there is. Yeah. You know, well, I guess, you know, the Oklahoma class starships yeah. have a Slaughterville and they have the, yeah. yeah, they have a Slick and they have a Slap Out. And-
but that makes sense, actually. I mean, you're probably right. Like the California class, probably the shuttles are all named after landmarks in California.
Yeah. 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 I'm just wondering how far they'll take it. Hopefully they can hang onto their shuttles a little bit easier. You know, if the mainstream hero ships have shuttle troubles, then maybe hopefully it won't be a running joke about how many shuttles the Cerritos loses. But yeah, we'll see. It's interesting though; they've shown us at least a couple of different alien landscapes. And you know, if it really is a second contact, you would think there'd be a lot of planet. You know, Port right. Robertson from NBC 1967 would be thrilled that they're doing so many planet shows.
Yeah.
And they're not having to worry about bottle show budgets. So, you know, animation is right. all the same.
Yeah.
I do like the line about she says we live and work, we live on a spaceship. You're not getting killed by a spear or whatever.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good line, you know.
But it's so often with Star Trek, however, that, you know, you're going to get killed by spikes or spears mm-hmm. or gloves with poisoned
stone knives and bears. Oh, wait, that's something different. Yeah. Sewn up with catgut. Yeah.
Yeah. So another question I wanted to ask you is, in simple terms, the question is Star Trek the right platform for a comedy? Not comedy, but a comedy. So Star Trek is filled with humor. Star Trek IV is a very funny movie. It's very organically funny. Star Trek V tries to be a funny movie, but pretty much fails because the humor is very forced. Mm-hmm. You've got Deep Space Nine, which people like to say is the dark series about the war, which is the series that probably has the most humor in it of all the series. Mm-hmm. So, certainly humor works in Star Trek, of course, but if you're thinking about just making a comedy, is Star Trek really the right platform for that?
I sense some hesitation and trepidation in your tone there, Chris. Here's the thing. I think we're talking here. We're saying, oh, it's animation and it's not, mm-hmm. you know, it's not Akira. It's not some horrendously unrelenting drama. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's going to be fine. What you said earlier, I think without being all 70s PSA, you know, just say no to drugs, kids. I don't think it'll be unrelenting, but I think the current, it's a younger audience, and I think it mm-hmm. couldn't be Star Trek unless it had, at the end of the show, things are right. There is a moral code. There is an ethical balance. There is a Roddenberry vision, future, diversity, representation, rationality in the end. We may be drunk on rum and an ale, but we figure out a way to get sober real fast and fix things at the end. I mean, whatever it is, this is not going to be yuck yucks. And I'm, you know, mm. and I, it, but it's going to appeal to a sharper, snarky, you know, the meme generation. If Facebook is for grandmas, I guess the memes have gone over to Instagram and now they're TikTok dance videos or whatever. But that snappy kind of fast moving, always looking for the next cool thing, new thing, I think it'll be fine. And I think the way Mike, again, demonstrated with his Warped book, you know, it's like that old thing about if you're in the family, you can make fun of somebody in the family and it's okay. You can jibe somebody in the family. But when it's somebody mm-hmm. outside, then it's an insult. Then it's, you know. And I think Mike and I think probably the team he has, if they weren't fans, they've got there. But I think, again, a lot of times you want a staff that's got diverse comings and goings, but you have mm-hmm. writers' rooms and everybody's thrown in there together, eating mm-hmm. each other. So, you know, creatively and when you're exhausted. But I think in the mix of things, it's going to be okay. I could be wrong. We could watch this and go, eh. But they've done 10,
right,
and they've done both seasons at the same time. And so the second batch of 10 will obviously draw on the experience and the lessons learned and what works and what doesn't work and how mm-hmm. do we get this – and what's the lines we push and the envelopes we push mm-hmm. as far as, you know, well, there will be some yuck-yuck humor moments. We've seen it, but – yeah, right now I just cringe when I see her going over the top, even though she's supposed to be if she's supposed to be the equivalent of a Chekhov, only a young woman instead of a guy,
yeah.
a 60s image of a young, headstrong guy. But then you think about Picard and Corey and Marta, right, mm-hmm. in the bar mm-hmm. with the you go, well, how far? And when you put that whole filter of it's an animation and it's going to be a little heightened and focused anyway,
yeah,
that's going to go over anything. So I think so far I haven't seen that it's completely out of line, even though I've had my moments.
Yeah.
But I think as a whole concept, it's going to be fine. And I think that grounding will be there in the end. And you've got those, even though a couple of them have quirky, obviously, you know, the Upper Decks people have some quirky things we've seen. We've heard the actors talk about. Jerry O'Connell talking about his first officer Ransom, who I wonder if that's any mm-hmm. relation to the lost Captain Ransom. But the captain looks very, you know, it looks like she's the kind that kind of get out of control, you know, caught out of position a couple times, but she looks like she's very grounded.
So, yeah. You know, we'll see. We'll see.
What if Ransom is like really into deer hunting? That would be like a really like other level connection to Voyager and Ransom, and because you was the deer hunter.
But yeah. Anyway. Although I think there's been a cat in reference to hunting animals, but I get your, yeah, I got it. That's for all the canonistas to jump up and go, but, yeah, yeah.
But it could be where she seems over the top in the trailer, but once you see it in context of the episode, maybe it's just a brief moment and it makes perfect sense. And that's not her personality. That's where it's very difficult to tell at this point, you know, what's going on with what they're creating.
Right, right, right.
So there are two seasons of 10 episodes, and you said they've done all 20 at once, and they will release them as two 10-episode seasons.
Yeah, I don't know if they've... I know they finished the first 10. I don't know if the second 10 have been totally finished. I don't know. I've lost track. Maybe somebody has... Again, everybody, follow these people's Instagrams and social, you know, Twitters and things, well, because they're talking about it as much as CBS will let them say. And sometimes they drop things and they weren't supposed to say.
And sometimes more. Yeah.
Sometimes so more, yes.
The reason I ask is because if you think about adjusting to fan reaction, which has been, I want to say, an unfortunate side effect of the social media age. Yeah. Where you've seen creatives adjust to fan reaction and sometimes, I think, water down their creative vision because fans got upset about something. In this case, even if they're not completely finished, if they've already pretty much decided, here's what we're doing in those other 10, then there's not that opportunity for that kind of adjustment.
Well, and it's, you know, and being animation, there would be a little more latitude. I mean, they're talking about this long lead time. But I'm thinking more about maybe not so much about the characters and the animations and the character models and all that, but from the 3D models. But the background and the backgrounds have to be matted in 3D too. And you know, it's not like the old days of having, well, here's the bridge from the view of the, you know, from the, what would it be? The starboard forward corner of the front helm looking back toward the turbo lift door, standard shot. And here's the standard overhead with the circle and the helm and the, you know, and you get those backgrounds over and over again, then they'd animate characters against that. And they go crazy with alien planets or borrow from some of their other, the Herculoids or something. I don't know. But I think they've done an incredible job. I think they've 3D, I wouldn't be surprised they haven't 3D modeled in their animation style, you know, the bridge and sick bay and engineering and some of the cargo bays and things and holodecks and all that. And that's where, and not just that they had to build them, but they've done some really nice detail work. And if a lot of that's where the work went, and if people, those air and there's some corner of fandom that just rebels against, you know, for instance, for some reason, I don't know if... If they suddenly start doing holographic views, that could be happened by this time. Holographic.
That would
comms.
Be great if Lower Decks had holographic communicators, but in animation.
On animated, right. But everybody's carrying around a little implant where you know where the chair is in the room of the person you're talking to, and you can go sit down in
and
their chair.
And you can
chair.
Sit down on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's got magnetic cohesion. Or they sit anyway. If it really was a thing, because like, you know, Discovery, by the time the second or third wave of assembled writers got midway through the year and wished there hadn't been so much spent on those massive Klingon sets that everybody loved to brag about how intricate they were. And by the time they were into mirror episodes, they weren't using them anymore. They were redressing them and repurposing them.
They were beautiful sets.
But they spent so much on them thinking out of the gate, that's what, you know, there's going to be much more there. And they just figured out how to redress things.
Yeah.
So that was a case where halfway through you wished you had done some things differently, but you invested so much money you couldn't change in a physical world. Yeah. And this is animation. And even though you're investing time and money in some of these things, it's a hell of a lot easier to change an animated model than, a huge physically built set or whatever. But I don't think it's these, you know, out of the gate, it looks really good. That's why I'm just so used to, I've tried to get used to the fact that I think something is 80, 90% pretty good, positive, even beyond what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. And then to wake up and see the first still or the first image or the first trailer or the first scene and see how much a fandom, you know, when the ship, when the Cerritos itself first came out and people were criticizing it and everything from it looks stupid to the tech heads, God bless them, going, how do you get into the nacelles? There's no, like the same way you got in the nacelles of the Grissom, like through a dinky access tube, or you actually have some kind of a transporter where you're
you
shielding
could just
where
beam
you can
there. I mean, yeah.
Well, you could say, you know, you have to worry about the fields around the warp plasma and the coils, but it's like, it's not new.
Larry, I think keeping it lower decks theme, what you do to get to the nacelles is you climb into like a giant version of those American bank vacuum tubes for the drive-through. And you climb in and you close it, and then it sucks you in, and then you fly out into the nacelles.
I was going to say the bank tubes from the 40s or 50s or 60s.
Yeah. Do they still use those in the U.S., by the way?
I think it's everything's gone digital. Yeah.
Okay.
You've got ATMs
everywhere.
I've
not been
now.
To the U.S. in a long time, so I don't know.
There might be some little mountain or backwoods places where they still, where you can't get a good wire signal or something and you have those back. Did you know that in the 60s, when they built the famous consoles at Mission Control in Houston, which is now a historic monument, and they built the new one, and they just, like Mike and Denise just worked on the rebuilt ones for All Mankind on the Apple network.
Right.
When they built those, they showed this to us when we were taking a tour. They had those vacuum tubes because in the day, the little computer monitors on the console stations in the mid 60s technology, you know, famously your iPhone has more computing power in it than the Apollo Command and Lunar modules together had.
Yeah.
Which is
by
insane.
Far.
Right. Yeah. But just to, if you were sitting at a station and your screen had input, and you wanted to get it to somebody else, there's no printers. They didn't have screen to – people would like either take notes, handwrite the data off your screen, your little simple, you know, like characters on screen numbers, or people would like take Polaroids of the screen, but they had a vacuum tube system so you wouldn't have to get up and get a runner or run it yourself. And they would put their notes – or their little Polaroids of their screen, stick it in the vacuum tube, and there was like a little chamber, right? Those famous green consoles, industrial green, in the middle, kind of like dead center in the middle and at the lower end of the slanty console is a vacuum tube. And they would stick that in. When they were, it was like, well, of course they did. They didn't have printers. They didn't have line printers until the mid-late 70s. Anyway.
Yeah.
You know, the famous IBM green paper.
And this is what Starfleet got rid of. And that's why in Star Trek, you have to put the information on a pad and then you have to walk it across the ship.
Yes.
And hand it to someone.
Of course. The whole point about a pad was downloaded information. Originally, you talked to Mike and Rick. The pad was like, we don't have to do things at a console. Right. You can download it and walk around with your... But the idea that now you're going to... You hit a button and send it from your pad to their screen or their... Yes. What's really funny is you get to the movies and they have budget and they're walking around in the movies on a movie budget with like 3 foot long pads.
Yeah.
They're in that security briefing in First Contact. And here's a really big honking pad for a really big mission.
Right. Like, this is for really important information.
this is forget your little hero red pad, Geordi. This is the big honking gold 3 foot pad. Right.
You know, and one of my favorite scenes is Picard with like all the pads scattered across the desk. Single-use pads. Absolutely.
Yeah, single-use pit. Well, those are called SUPs, yes. Those are
exactly.
SUPs. Sup. When someone walks in the ready room and says, hey, Captain, what's up? And he goes, look at all of them.
What's up? All of this.
What's up? Yes, all of this.
Let me ask you, I have a business question, actually, Larry. One thing I wanted to get your insight on. So I mentioned at the top of the show that Lower Decks is going to premiere on August 6th, but that's in the U.S. and Canada. So internationally, there's still no word.
I have, we've got so many, yes.
But my question is, Viacom CBS Global Distribution Group, they're the ones that handle the international distribution. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the recent series, so Discovery is on Netflix around the world, minus Canada. And Picard is on Amazon Prime. And Short Treks, I don't know country to country for sure, but in Japan, we got the first season, as they call it, of short treks.
Yeah.
Long after it was out in the US. Mm-hmm. And the second season we never got, as far as I know.
I think that's universal. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got this first batch as a prelude to season two, really.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we didn't get the rest of them at mm-hmm. all. And like if I look at Picard, I don't know, and you probably, I know you know more than me. Maybe you know for sure what happened. When I look at Picard, I feel like maybe Amazon just outbid Netflix, or maybe Netflix was a little bit hesitant to take on another Star Trek series and Amazon was interested. When I look at the promotions that Amazon did in London, as someone who has worked in marketing for many years and branding, I mm-hmm. see the opportunity, and I think it worked out really well for Amazon, mm-hmm. and I think mm-hmm. they did a really nice job with it there. Like in Japan, they didn't do anything special, but in London, clearly they right. did. And in the US, I don't know what all they did. I see Lower Decks as being far less attractive to Netflix or Amazon Prime in terms uh-huh. of if we've got to dish out money to get the license to distribute this in these international markets, do we want to do that? Can you shed any light on like how the business side of that might work?
Yeah, no, well, I don't know anything definitive. I'm just mm-hmm. kind of guessing, but it's the point. It's, you know, so what's the premises here? If CBS Viacom CBS, whatever the hell, the new married, however they hyphenated their new remarried name, the thing premieres Thursday. Every other show they've done so far had a day later for the rest of the globe. Mm-hmm. If they had it out there and sold it and had it out, it would know about it. It would, you know, ideally, it would have been probably the same pattern. It's animation, it's half hours. Yeah. There's only 10 of them, but there's only 10 of, you know, Picard. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, of course they want to make more money. They want to globalize it. I'm sure they're trying to sell it. I do not know anything, but I'm just guessing maybe somewhere between Netflix. I know the toxic world out there loves to talk about how, you know, Netflix feels burned at the reaction to Discovery, but the numbers are that Discovery's done awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the switch there was Prime. Maybe Netflix was counting on Picard. I don't know. But Amazon Prime was very, very, very hungry. I'd read some bits about what all they went after. And mm-hmm. they've tried to make, you know, Netflix is just drowning you in new programming, movies and series especially.
Yeah.
And some of it's good, some of it's not so good, some of it's outstanding. They're not all nominated for Emmys, and a lot of things don't deserve to be comparatively. But Prime is Mrs. Maisel is a prime example of something they really spent a lot of money and lavished on and wanted it to be. What's the opposite of a loss leader? Was that thing that a grocery store or somebody would price so cheap was to get you in the door, and then you would buy everything else. Yeah. It's kind of that, only different. It's like it's a tent pole to get you to come over to Prime and think about the fact they don't just have old shows. They've got new, original, exciting stuff. And mm-hmm. here's an example. And they're mm-hmm. physically not keeping up with Netflix on numbers of shows.
Sure.
But you can only watch so much peak TV anyway. It's driving people crazy. So if there's one or two or three choice shows there, right, that get you there. And I think that's how Picard wound up. Prime was like, no, let's just throw our money down here and outbid everybody, even if it was, you know, I don't know how much it was, but I think that's what motivated that. Mm-hmm. But obviously, CBS wants to sell Lower Decks globally. they want that. And no one, and if they had it, they would be announcing it. It's not like the day before, it's not like August 5th, they're going to say, they might. Maybe there's some 11th hour negotiating going on right now, and they hop up on Wednesday and say, hey, look, it is going to be the next day around the world on Hulu, not Hulu. Hulu isn't global. Whatever could get around the world the most, you know. Mm-hmm. If they could, they do it. And it may still be in the works. Or it mm-hmm. may be, and it may be a case of everybody who wants to, even though it's animation, it can't be as much cost to produce as a live action show with hundreds of crew and all of that, and many more guilds and contractual arrangements, you know, underway. Yeah,
which is something fans don't think about at all, right?
Yeah, fans don't think about that. It's, you know, the whole complication with doing fan films and making them, legitimizing fan films after the fact mm-hmm. is all the guilds and contracts and how in the hell do you navigate that and and retroactively negotiate all that. But it can't be as complex as animation where you don't have as many people hands-on. The voice actors are getting are on a voice perception, scale, wage, image thing, not I'm using my whole body and my visage is here too.
Right.
And you're not making makeup prosthetics and you're not – you animate a phaser beam the same way you you animate somebody's eyeball. I mean, it's all the same. It's just drawing. Mm-hmm. So my point is maybe some of the, even if it's cheaper and there's only so many episodes, maybe everybody is hanging back to see exactly, maybe they're the same way you are. Maybe they're waiting to see what the tone of Star Trek animation is going to look like and what the reaction is because they feel like, since it's only animation, air quotes, they can if it's a month later or 2 months later, they can afford to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not going to be like not being there with a live action show right there.
Right.
And they know that there's more and more shows rolling out. And of course, oh, I don't have to say hashtag Nick Trek anymore. Prodigy is already sold to Nickelodeon, which will be a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
And this whole mystery will be gone there on that case. But for right now, I think something may be in the works or somebody, it's just going to be, I think maybe they've got feelers out and maybe people are just waiting to see what it really looks like and what the reaction is before they, or maybe they're going to do it. They're just, they're haggling over the price. You know, we'll see.
Well, that's probably what it is.
Eventually, it's got to be around the rest of the world. But I will say, I've heard from so many of my Portal 47 folks and our Tuesday Live people and everybody on anything I've, you know, on anything where I've been on a mic and have our fans from Europe especially.
Yeah.
And everybody's pissed about it. They all kind of go, oh, I'm sure I'll figure it out some way. But they don't want to do that. They want to pay for it up front and have it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they want to be good fans and support the franchise.
That's exactly the thing. So, like, I'm sure that the studio wants to distribute globally, and they probably are talking to people, of course.
Right.
The flip side of it is, you know, someone like me who lives in Tokyo, we, as Star Trek fans, we feel in recent years, in particular, as new content has come out, that we're treated as a secondary concern by the studio. Because, of course, there is a business consideration. Certainly, I understand that. And there are ways to work around it as a fan if you want to. But, of course, fans want to support the franchise. And so fans want to do everything on the up and up and do things properly. And so the studio has to find a way to make the content available to everyone.
Give them a way to do that. Yes. Yeah.
But I know that it's not all completely in their hands because they need assistance from third parties as well. Mm-hmm. So from the fan perspective, however, the international fan perspective, of course, people are concerned about how are we going to see Lower Decks? How are we going to see Short Treks when they make more Short Treks?
Exactly.
Is Discovery Season 3 going to come out on schedule on Netflix? Just like season 1 and 2 did. I'm not sure that that's actually ever been addressed. I'm assuming that it is, and it probably is, but I don't know for sure if that's going to be the case. Now, you mentioned something interesting a moment ago. You said Prodigy, that's all worked out because it's Nickelodeon, but we don't have Nickelodeon in Japan.
Oh, well, so there you go. Okay,
Who knows?
There has to be a little bit of mystery in our lives.
Right?
Heaven forbid I imply that something is all tied up in a nice, neat bow.
No, but what
otherwise.
It means, though, is that like when you think of a third party like Netflix, because Netflix is essentially global, if there's an agreement with Netflix, then it's worked out. But Nickelodeon, that's different. So who knows what might happen for international viewers of Prodigy who want to see that. So it's going to be interesting to see. I just really hope that the studio will find a way. And one thing that I proposed on another show is, especially with Lower Decks, because it's short form, relatively short form. You know, it's a half hour. I'm guessing it's probably going to be 20-something minutes, right? Because if you account for a normal half-hour show which has space for advertising, what would you do? The NFL has made agreements with Twitter to broadcast games through Twitter. Like, you can actually go and watch stuff. What if CBS decided that globally you could watch Lower Decks episodes through a Twitter stream, which would be like a different way of making it available to a global audience that kind of bypasses that traditional studio distribution, like entertainment distribution, like Netflix, Amazon Prime type platform.
Mm-hmm.
Just an idea, you know, try something different in this age.
I wasn't, you know what, you're ahead of me there. I didn't realize, and I haven't had my eye on it, especially in Corona times, but I didn't realize that NFL had this deal with Twitter.
But I'm pretty sure it's NFL who did a few. It's not like every game is there, but there were some like things that they did that allowed them to show sports on Twitter.
Hello, fans, and welcome to the Twitter Game of the Week.
Yeah, it was a few years ago. Maybe it was like 2017 and like Thursday Night Football or something like that. But they did something, some kind of tie-up. You know, it's kind of
a one-off, just a one-off, yeah.
But if you think about something like Lower Decks, you know, why not? I mean, it's technically feasible and it could be something interesting to try if you're not getting a bite from Netflix or some other, you know, major distribution channel, because ultimately, you know, keeping the fans engaged is really critical. And there's a whole world beyond the United States. And I just do hope that the studio looks for new ways to keep the international fan base engaged.
I totally get that. And like I said, that's why I enjoy being in touch with a lot of folks around the world, even more directly than just generically reading comments, because everybody keeps that perspective fresh. Hey, wait a minute. And it helps me keep it fresh, like in a discussion like right now. But I want to go, you know, there was a day when the movies would premiere in the holidays here. I remember the Generations movie happening tied in with a convention that my friend Eric Stillwell produced in March or April. So like the UK fans had to wait 4 months.
Yeah, we used to have to wait 6 months in Japan for the Star Trek films to come out.
Yeah, yeah. So on one hand, Weed Hopper, it's it's gotten way better. But yes, it's a day later.
A big difference. Like I remember Insurrection. I think it was a 6 month wait. But the big difference is that back then, we didn't have Twitter and all these platforms where we got continuous streams of spoilers from American fans. That's where the big difference. You could actually still live in your bubble and just wait for it, and then you could just enjoy it. And you can't do that anymore.
I get you. Yes, I hear that. I hear it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you lose half your audience. They all say, okay, you guys talk about it now that it's out, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And we're going to go over here and shut, you know, la, 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 fingers and ears and not listen or try or do other devious means to try to keep up. But
I remember, you know, Star Trek Into Darkness came out and on the Ready Room, on this show, there's only one episode. This is my show, right? There's only one episode of this show that I'm not on in the feature. And that was the Star Trek Into Darkness discussion because I couldn't see the movie. And I did see the movie months before Japanese fans did. I went to Paramount's office and they let me see it there in their screening room. But still, it was months after it came out in the US. And I had to sign something saying that I will not reveal that he's Khan. I'm like, why did I have to sign this? Like, this movie's been out for 4 months. Anyone who wants to know knows already. Like, I can literally order the Blu-ray from Amazon US.
The internet does not have region zones.
It was so crazy.
Oh, that is funny. Yeah.
But yeah, that happened. That happened to me.
Yeah.
Getting back to our discussion here is
lawyers, they love not to change.
Right. Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, getting ready to start wrapping up here. Prodigy, we don't know much about right now, but what we do know about Prodigy is, of course, that it's going to be on Nickelodeon, and we know that it's coming in 2021. Mm-hmm. It's aimed at a new generation of fans, they say, and the story is that it follows a group of lawless teens who discover a derelict Starfleet ship and use it to search for adventure, meaning, and salvation.
Salvation.
Now, Larry, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't this the plot of the DS9 episode Valiant?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if these teenagers, these prodigy kids can steer. No, I don't know if these prodigy kids are going to all be wearing uniforms, cadet or otherwise.
They're not all in Red Squadron, right? They didn't steal the Defiant class ship and then fly it around looking for adventure. Right.
They're probably more like in Gray Squadron, as in morals and ethics. But
on a serious note, I mean, this is kind of a good idea, right? To bring new fans into the franchise and you connect with younger viewers. What do you think about the idea behind Prodigy?
You're stealing my speech book. Exactly. Yeah. Well, and when we talk about Lower Decks being a kid's show, and I have parents go, excuse me, I have a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old, and they, based on what I've seen, they're not watching Lower Decks with me, you know, or until I feel a little more comfort zone about it or whatever. Yeah. And Prodigy, and that could be a point, but Prodigy is meant to be more, you know, because kids watch, it's not, 8-year-olds don't watch a cartoon with 8-year-olds. They watch animation cartoons with 12-year-olds. And I'm speaking roughly and broadly, but you're always like, it's like young adult novels, 10 and 12-year-olds are reading for their level, but the characters are often like 14 and 16-year-olds. I mean, there's aspirational thing there. So Prodigy, if this is like teen, if it's like 16, 18-year-olds, well, then it will be 10, 12-year-olds watching it or in that. And it's Nickelodeon, which is not, it's not like, you know, ABC or NBC or whatever. It's not like a broadcast over-the-air channel, if that means anything anymore. But it's not CBS All Access either. Nickelodeon is so ubiquitous in most countries.
There probably won't be any blatant cursing on Nickelodeon, right?
Like, well, CBS All Access. It'll be interesting to see where the language and where some of those parameters fall. But this is going to skew younger. My point is it'll skew younger than Lower Decks. It'll be a different tone too. I think this will be more earnest and straightforward. And I don't mean on the nose, but I mean, Lower Decks is winky, winky, snarky, snarky. And
to me, this sounds like it would be more like the animated version of a young adult novel.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, but I'm excited for this, too. Maybe this one really will sell action figures at Walmart and Target again. Versus Lower Decks 2, even.
Well, there's one Lower Decks action figure that they can't sell at Walmart, Larry. At least not without the black bar.
I was going to say the Ensign
Boimler. I think.
Yeah. The Ensign Boimler in the shuttle moment. But no, so the, so, and I, you know,
that
I said,
one's at Spencer's. Is that store still around in the U.S.?
You're dating yourself.
I know.
No, like Christie's Toy Box, I guess, maybe or something. But, what's the mainstream? But no, so this is, so Prodigy is the Hageman brothers who, you know, that people say that, oh, it's the Hageman brothers. Like it's, you know, I don't know, Milton Bradley or something, but I watched a couple of episodes of Troll Hunters, and it's quality made. It's not my cup of animation tea, but, you know, anime tea, but it's obviously there. And you know what? They are probably nerdy Trek fans too. I'm just thinking, and if they don't, they've got a writer's room full of them, and they've introduced their writer's room too. They've had them at Vegas. Both the animated shows had their, which was great because not only are they writers of a show that hasn't been released yet, they're writers of a show that hasn't been released yet. That's animation. So like nobody knows what they look like and they could walk around and, you know, I saw Mike last year, Mike McMahon walking around and, they've talked about who's there. The Benson sisters, Shauna and Julie are working on this. They're with 100 and some other things over the years. There's different people. It's on Memory Alpha and Wikipedia. You can see what's been, there's things have been collated as news reports have been out. And again, social media, they posted a party from their first season wrap party with the writers all kind of, you know, the writers are done. I'm sure the producer level ranks are overseeing art and, you know, whatever. But the writers had finished their scripts and they were having a wrap party at some point since the start of Corona. I think they were talking about it being a socially distanced, you know, finale wrap party for writers. So it's kind of a cross section of people. And there's some quotes from I'm just stumbling into this. There's some quotes here from, it's Heather Caden talking. You know, Alex's producer partner, and says the thing they liked about the Hagemans is they're writing a younger audience, but they're not writing Muppet babies. She said, it's not little Spock and little Kirk. They're not playing down to the audience level.
But Larry, Muppet Babies was a good show.
Well, see, now it's like classic Warner Brothers, which
especially
to me is
when
like,
they did the Seinfeld Babies skit. That was Muppets Tonight.
Yes. But you know what? You say that, but like the best, like classic Warner Brothers was, and like Star Trek itself. You know, the kids get it on one level and adults can watch and get it.
Right.
You know, all stuff that goes right by you. And then you know you're a grown up when you watch the kids. If it's good classic animation, well done, and you've grown, you know you've got there when you watch. Wait a minute. I watched this a million times and I just now got that Joker. Oh, that was slightly off color, but nowhere near enough to be. Yeah, they would do the parodies of Jack Benny. They would do the parodies of the Honeymooner with the mice. And there were some Looney Tunes cartoons where they either had the actual actors or they had voice actors, you know, recreating Jackie Gleason doing Ralph Cramden. But they did them as mice two or three different times. Mm-hmm. So, that multi-level approach to different ages takes something different away and are entertained. And I think they're going to be there. And I'm very excited for this too. They're saying 2021, which I mean makes sense. That was the original. And you know, animation, what's slowing down? You know, there's filming up front, and then what slowed down at Discovery's season ending that they had filmed was things like post and composing music and having to record all the instruments separately and then mix them and all of that. And everything just taking longer, even when it was people remotely working like visual effects, but they're not all in a bank, one room together. So and to start up filming anew is a totally different thing. So on one hand, you think these animated series have it made, right? Because voiceover people can record in their own place anyway and all that. So you would hope that we'd have Prodigy before we see a season four of Discovery or a season two of Picard, but we'll see. They've been working on it for over a year, so.
Well, let me ask you a last question to close out. We've got Lower Decks starting on August 6th, then we've got Discovery coming in October.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have 23 consecutive weeks of new Star Trek, which I think is the longest stretch since what, you know, you and I always refer to as the golden years of Star Trek back in the 90s.
Well, here's the thing, Chris. This is like historic. I mentioned this somewhere, maybe Tuesday's Live this week, but I want to blog it. This is historic because even when you had 26 episode, you know, original series would be 25, 27, and Berman era would be 26 a year except for the strike season. Even when you had that, you would have holiday breaks. There would be rerun breaks. They would schedule a break, you know, to catch up a show.
True. Yeah.
We've never had 20. And yeah, you say, well, Lower Decks is half hour animation, blah, blah, blah. But as far as a water cooler, a digital water cooler topic to talk about, we have never had 23 straight weeks of Star Trek in a row, successive. In a row. This is unprecedented. It really is. And it's funny to watch fans go, wow, 23 weeks in a row. And I want to go, you know, measure it in your years. I mean, we've never had it before. We've never had that kind of, unless you're a new fan and you sat down and you just had the luxury of binge watching things, you know, I mean, and you didn't wait 3 weeks to say, 3 months to see what happened after Mr. Worf fire. Yeah. You know, if you're a wimp and you came along later, just because you could. No, this is
Mr. Worf, fire. And then skip intro on Netflix. And you're right into the resolution.
Right. Well, when they released that Blu-ray redo and they edited the two pieces together like a movie without even a break, Mr. Worf, fire. And it goes right on.
Yeah.
The music swell doesn't, they re-edited the music so it doesn't have the huge swell right there.
Yeah. I think I have the disc. I think I've only watched it once though with that cut. Yeah.
We were watching that in the theater going, well, that's horribly disappointing. Yeah. You don't ever want to watch that again. It's that was a waste. Yeah.
So we are in unprecedented times for sure with Star Trek. So a lot of excitement coming up.
I thought you
up.
Meant with COVID-19, but yes.
Well, that too. Pretty much everything these days.
Everything is different, right? Yeah.
Pretty much everything. Yeah. So I guess all this new Star Trek is our way of looking at 2020 and saying, do your worst, but we've got 23 weeks still of new Star Trek, so we're going to get through you.
Well, sure. Again, we don't know how season 2 Lower Decks or season 1 of Prodigy will unspool at what time.
Right.
It feels like they should have less of a mountain to climb than obviously the live action shows, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we'll have that, but at least we've got these weeks, and then maybe we'll have them before we have the successive follow-ups on those two before we have the others. But it's we're a hell of a lot better off than we were a year or two ago or 3 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's like just having the tech that we are doing right now, you know, Zoom and virtual meetings and the agents and conventions, pro and fan, that have come up with virtual panels and all these. I just think, you know, even 10 years ago, much less further back, if we'd had a pandemic the accepted protocol was for everybody to buckle down until it passed, until we, you know, to stop a spread, get on the right side of the math. But it feels like even as insane as things feel, we're able to be a lot more saner than we would have been just 10 years ago and get work done and keep other things, keeping business and recreation and government wheels still turning, you know?
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, Larry, what do you have coming up? So we had like a virtual San Diego Comic-Con happen, mm-hmm. and everything seems to be virtual these days. So tell people what you've got on the horizon.
Well, good thing. Yeah, well, if you didn't hear about it, now there's been some news stories out about how the virtual big old grandfather of them all, San Diego Comic-Con, didn't hit expectations. But part of that's just because of the nature of the beast. It can't be a live event with 180,000 people there generating that excitement.
Yeah.
If you think about it, like I had a panel that I was thrilled to have. It was an idea I wanted to do live, but my panel with three generations of science advisors to Star Trek, all the three last formerly titled series TV science advisors, starting with Narain Shankar from the 2 years of Next Gen, and then Andre all of his years, Bermanis, and now Aaron McDonald, who a lot of people have met at Vegas and on the cruise and all. And we had a Zoom box, and I had the three of them, and we were talking about how, you know, some of the stories, but it really devolved, it was awesome. It turned into how science has been handled, how the evolution of science has come along with the growth in the audience.
Oh, I thought you guys were in like a real life Genesis episode from the end of the Next Generation there, devolving, but...
No, we didn't have any
Barclay
spiders.
Who was the spider, Larry?
I was the spider. 8 hours in makeup for a virtual panel. It was crazy. No, make you watch. No, but like all those, like the CBS official panels got all the big headlines, but there were two or three other Star Trek related ones too. My friend Ali, Dr. Matu, he reunited with
the real doctor. Yeah, I know.
Yes,
yeah.
The real doctor of our pair. They brought back their Star Wars versus Star Trek psychology and did that virtually.
Yeah.
They planned to do that. But no, there are tons. But the thing is, I might have been in a room with 300, 400, 500. Last year, we had a standing room only people turned away at the door for Bob Butler, which was awesome and amazing, the director of The Cage. And people were thrilled to see him live and answer questions. And it was great. And that's been my really biggest splash in the few years I've done panels there. You know, we have a few hundred, but that was an SRO room that should have been bigger, and we turned a few hundred people away at the door. Well, this year, I'm sure, and with the drawing power of Narain and Andre and Aaron and revived Star Trek, we probably would have had a room of, I don't know, of capacity, 500, 600, 800, maybe 1,000. Whatever it would have been live, and I'm sure we would have done well, the virtual panel has had like 4,800 people view it. So on one hand, that's a bonus to you miss the excitement of the live, and they're still filmed, but people are seeing it, and maybe people are Googling more for things and they're seeing it. And lots of people that have never set foot in San Diego, much less like have been to Vegas and are watching like virtual TrekCon that Ryan and Siroc did. My friend Neil did a convention to replace, he organized it like out of the gate in March, and it was called Lockdown Con. He's still putting things up permanently, so they're not viewable right now. But he did all, it was multi-genre, mainly like writers and producers and creatives. But one or two little conventions I was involved with did virtual versions. There was one done just for vendors, because vendors are losing out too. And this GalaxyCon has been probably, in the Trek world, has made the most people the happiest. Mm-hmm. And most of these things are free. GalaxyCon had upsells where you could get a 2-minute window. You know, they're kind of pioneering models here, business models. Because the actors are losing money and the actors' agents are losing income too. I mean, it's hurting. The vendors are hurting. And the tourism is, you know, Comic-Con San Diego is the biggest thing to happen in San Diego. Forget Major League Baseball or even a Super Bowl when they have them. Comic-Con, year in and year out, is the biggest thing. It's like South by Southwest in Austin, which is a different, you know, music and theater and film. But it's the single biggest economic engine of the year for that locality, and they've lost that. And even this at-home isn't going to – the virtual version isn't going to get that back. So, you know, people are hurting. But it was great to have this where, like I said, if this had happened 10, 15 years ago, the preponderance of this – and we've had 2, 3, 4, 5 months for if you didn't have a virtual life, like Portal 47 that I've created 5 years ago, you know, we were doing this 5 years ago and still with people you're not hearing at these panels. But that said, now everybody is a Zoom expert and they know how that feels, and people have upgraded. The grid is upgraded. Companies have upgraded. People, individuals have upgraded their experience, their knowledge, and now it's no big deal. We've turned that fast. So But I think it's been, you know, everybody misses live and we want to get back to it. And the thing on the horizon, these last fall cons are I forget when they announced they're not going to happen, you know, or they're postponing. And I'm like, oh, wait, that hasn't canceled already? And I seriously doubt if STLV, the postponed version to December, is going to happen. We'll see.
I don't think so.
But I don't think it's going to happen. So everybody's really thinking about 2021. We're, you know, sports world. We're watching to see what's going to happen, you know.
What did I see? A couple of days ago, I saw the Star Trek cruise. They're promoting like 2022 or 3.
They canceled for the year and pushed it back a year. They're normally in the spring.
It's
and
even
not
more
gonna...
than that. I'm pretty sure it was like 2022 or 3.
Next year's would have been early 2021, and they pushed it to 2022.
So they're
right.
really like, looking out, which I think is what you have to do,
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're dealing with, but it's, so it's been a stopgap, and it's been virtual panels and things have been presented. A lot of people weren't happy because San Diego's was all pre-recorded and they want to brand things and check it out. But they also are offering, you know, like where Virtual TrekCon was like one panel an hour and it was Star Trek and they were live and people could interact with people, but they also had the buying component. You wanted to buy something and hang around and be there. And everything was pre-recorded for Comic-Con, but they also offered, they tried to approximate a normal schedule and have 10 or 12 options every hour. And that's hundreds and hundreds of 50-minute panels to process and post and brand and all of that. So people missed out on the live component, even though they offered like live streaming chat. But people, you know, you could talk to each other and comment, but you couldn't interact with the panelists.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's pluses and minuses, and, you know, and fans forget about, people are saying, well, the Virtual TrekCon was a lot more fun. And it's like, well, that's like 1/1000th the scale of San Diego. So people should be thrilled that we're able to do anything at all this year. That's amazing.
It's going to be interesting for sure to see what happens. So if people want to keep following you and interacting with you, I guess Portal 47 right now is probably the best option.
Well, that's, you know, it's amazing the things that I started saying to try to explain what that was. That's one thing. The good thing is I don't have to explain how, you know, the live part of Portal 47 works. People get it now without me having to do that. But it's still different than what they're experiencing. But I say it's Portal 47 is a mini con all year long. And, you know, we see these things come and go and what's going to happen over winter and what'll be the next evolution. But for sure, we're chunking right along and picking up new members, which I've been very grateful for. So, LarryNemechek.com, at Larry Nemechek on Twitter, Larry Nemechek's Trekland. And I'm thrilled that we're building and looking to keep Portal 47 fresh and all of that. But also, I'm very tickled that my show, I alluded to it earlier. So Life Support Live that I do with Dr. Ali and Dr. Trek, and one of us is a real doctor.
You're waiting for me to say something, right?
I was you did already, actually. You slipped it in. He's sneaky promoting for me, and I didn't know it. No, I'm really, it's like I love all my, you know, my nerdiness and the archiving and the interviewing and the behind the scenesing, but it's nice to have something where we're not just talking about, you know, the cuff braid is a half inch further in from the edge of the shirt sleeve. Yeah. I mean, in talking about something that's most fun and helpful for people, and we have a good time. So that's Saturday mornings at 10, and it's multi-streams. It's on YouTube and Facebook and even Twitch. And anyway, I'm just really proud of that on top of Tuesdays Live at 1. And someday, Chris, someday, when we're able to walk amongst outdoors and be able to go and do what we want to do and say and interact with people, I'll be doing Trekland Treks again. Mm-hmm. And
Which will include a visit to the Cerritos Auto Dealership, right?
Yes. Oh, of now, boy. Thank you for that idea. Because, you know, we're desperate for new stops. They are hugging all the new Star Trek in Canada, damn it. We don't have as much. Thank God for Picard. But that's funny. I think I'll put that on the list. We can drive by the Cerritos exits.
That should be.
The 605. And I'll play one of the best jingles for people when they do.
And you
that,
teach everyone the lyrics to the jingle.
It's not hard.
Absolute must. I think it's an absolute must.
It's funny. That's, you know what's on the other end of that, looking through the telescope the other way? It's going to be funny if after Lower Decks premieres, if like the Cerritos Chamber of Commerce doesn't, you know, give Mike McMahon and Alex Kurtzman some kind of award for heightening the profile of Cerritos around the world.
Exactly.
I'm going to nominate them right now for the Cerritos Chamber of Commerce TV series homage of the year award or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's funny.
Exactly.
But anyway, I hope people come over and if they're listening, if they enjoy the way I talk here somehow, for some reason, if they enjoy this, to come over and, you know, trek with me on any of the other things we're doing all the time. I did a thing for a while called Nonfiction Fridays, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we talked about that last time.
We went about 14 weeks and I had a lot of disappointed puppy looks when I said this, but I wanted to stop it and reconsider how to do it bigger and differently and approach more people with it. But we did it as a Zoom meetup in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it really touched a nerve with a lot of people, but I just want to make it bigger. And I was feeling like I had done all these things in the vacuum of no one knew where COVID was going to go and the Corona time was going to go. And then after it did kind of settle out. So hashtag Nonfiction Friday has not seen the end of its days. I'm going to bring that back at some point. And the idea, because people just love that idea. And a lot more people love it than realize, I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so yeah, it's been an interesting year and a growth year. But it's like keeping stuff fresh and keep moving forward. And if only that damn CBS would put out some new Star Trek for us somehow they are.
They have heard your call, Larry.
Heard the call. I love how people say, oh, wow, I'm still learning something new about, you know, name it, fill in the blank. And that will always be there. But fresh helps.
Good. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't have as much exciting stuff going on as you do, but I am trying to get back into podcasting a little bit more, and I'm making some progress.
Well, we've set a record here from turnaround, didn't we?
I think we
have.
The
last episode we did was in this decade. So
exactly. You know. And this is not the only podcast I have recorded today, so I'm making some progress. But you can, you know, find me on past episodes here on the network, of course, of The Ready Room. And Matthew Rushing and I do The Orb together, where we talk Deep Space Nine. You can also find me on various episodes of other shows over the years. And I am going to be doing more. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. And that's also my username pretty much everywhere in social media, but definitely Twitter is the best place. But you'll also find me in the Babel Conference on Facebook, which is our listeners group. So if you'd like to share your thoughts on what Larry and I have talked about today, that's the place to do it. Just go to Facebook. If you're already a member of the group, you know how to get there. If you're not, type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field and it should come up. It's a closed group and we do ask you a few questions just to make sure that you're actually a listener of the network so that we can keep the bots out. Please answer the questions because I can't let you in if you don't answer the questions. And we get quite a few people who don't answer them. So please do that. And if you'd like to kind of go the traditional route and send emails, send a message to us, you can do that. If you go to our website at trek.fm/contact, you'll find a form there, choose the Ready Room, and then input your message and send it, and it will come to me by email.
Glad to see you keeping the old ways alive.
yeah, you got to keep the old ways alive. You know, that's something I learned from Admiral Adama. I learned you got to keep the old ways alive sometimes because you never know what's going to happen with technology. So anyway, I look forward to getting your messages that way. Or, of course, in the Babel Conference, you can talk with other listeners and talk to us there on Facebook. If you would like to support the show, we could definitely use your help in keeping the Ready Room and all the shows on the network going. You can find out how at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. Go there and find out what kind of perks we have available. You know, one thing we do have on offer is a chance to become an associate producer on the shows. And we have something called the Patrons Roundtable, where you can get on mic with fellow listeners and some of our hosts and talk Star Trek, you know, just like we do here on the shows. And we do have a feed for that. We publish it and we put it out there for everyone to listen to. So it's a great way to get on mic and share your thoughts on Star Trek. So you can find out how to do that at patreon.com/trekfm. Well, Larry, it's another Ready Room discussion is done. It was fun talking about Lower Decks today. And of course, our little side excursion into the world of the Emmys and into makeup and into resolving 30-year-old mysteries about Romulan foreheads. But I hope we can do it again soon, and we'll hop on here and talk about Lower Decks, of course, after we see some of the episodes and talk about how we feel about the stories we actually get.
Well, it has been fun, Chris, and I can't believe it's been less than a year since we talked last time. But you know what?
I know.
It has been a good discussion, but it's time to stick a strategically placed black rectangle in it because the Ready Room is done.